Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and what's next. It's a show that asks questions and peels back the layers of our average everyday experience and goes beyond scratching the surface. We interview people doing incredible things who are making a difference around the globe. Join me as we listen in and get one step closer to understanding that big ideas shared create collaboration. Collaboration can inspire community, and communities create social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is with Sarah Taxler, and we talk about her new film that's premiering at Hot Docs this year, 2022. Imagine that, actually coming back face to face, sort of post-COVID, at Hot Docs this year. But Sarah and I chatting about her new film, How Saba Kept Singing. You're going to want to see this film for a whole lot of reasons, but this is a film about, it's about history. It's about memory. It's about relationships. There's a comedic edge to it. It's about music as well. And Sarah and I had a great time. And she's a returning guest. Believe it or not, Sarah was on the show almost 300 interviews ago. Former Daily Show producer back in the day, I guess, when we talked about her film, Tickling Giants, also a film you're going to want to see. We talked about where entertainment and social justice can actually meet. But we talked about good listening and good storytelling and how important it is to tell true stories. We talked about this thing called this notion of beautiful coping mechanisms. How wonderful is that? And warm invitations, how stories are like warm invitations. We talked about the banality of evil. We went from comedy to serious. We were light. We were kind of heavy, but always, I hope, always meaningful. And we chatted a little bit about how there's, you know, so much more going on than meets the eye. Healing through stories, healing through others, human connection, and how important that really is. We talked about lost opportunity and about closure. And we touched on how prayer and satire are very similar. And I think that's a fascinating idea for sure that I hope going to pursue in a future interview. But Sarah was terrific, and the film, it's a beautiful, moving portrait of why relationships matter. And How Saba Kept Singing, it's at Hot Docs. Check it out. You can find it online at Hot Docs, the website. You can get tickets still, and you're going to hear Sarah talk a little bit about that. Don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my writing, my speaking, facetofacelive.ca for, as I said, coming up on 600 interviews, quite a library there for you to choose from. Go back and listen to some other stuff. I'd certainly appreciate it. But what I'd really appreciate is a simple review on iTunes or wherever it is you listen to podcasts. And wherever you do listen to podcasts, please subscribe. Oh, yeah, right. And did I mention leaving a review? That would be really terrific. Thanks for listening. And don't touch that dial. Coming right up, Sarah Taxler talking about her beautiful and moving new film, How Saba Kept Singing. Well, welcome to Face to Face Live. We are joined by a very special guest here with us today. We have Sarah Taxler. I'm not even sure where she's calling in from, and it's kind of irrelevant in this Zoom digital age, but Sarah is a returning guest. How crazy is that? Sarah Taxler, thanks for taking the time to join us on Face to Face today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm calling in from the magical land of New Jersey. Perhaps you've heard of it. Yes,
I have. Fairy tales. I have indeed. I'm not sure how to spell it, but I have heard of New Jersey.
Oh, well, hopefully you'll get to visit one day.
I hope so too. Yes. Magical. Is that right? Eh? Is that the first word that came to
mind? You
know
what? I'm actually a gigantic New Jersey defender, even though I said that in jest. My very first public film attempt was I went to college in the Midwest and my friends made fun of New Jersey. So I made a home movie called Stop the Ignorance, The Beauty That Is New Jersey. And wow. It was pretty persuasive. So.
Oh, that's awesome. That's pretty fun. I'll have to look for that. I have actually driven through New Jersey. Is Rutgers in New Jersey?
It is. Yep.
Yeah,
it's a state college.
I've actually spent a little bit of time there. What's that old crazy joke? I spent a whole week there one day.
Is it time flew?
Yeah. Time just flew. So Sarah, it's been a while since you've been on the show. I'm coming up on 600 episodes. We had you on for Tickling Giants episode 298. I can't believe it's almost been 5 years since I've seen you.
It's been a while.
What have you been doing? I'm kind of interested, you know?
So the last time I saw you, I was still at The Daily Show, I believe. I was a producer at The Daily Show. And since then, I said if I was going to keep making movies, I had to do it full time because it's, I think as I said to you, it's too expensive to be a hobby. And sure. It's like a crazy amount of work. So I worked for a while on another late night show called The Opposition. And then I decided that I should take a risk and give a shot at being a documentarian full time. And the last few years, that's what's been going on.
That's what's been going on. And you've been working on a very personal and intimate project, How Saba Kept Singing. And obviously, we're going to talk about that. Was it hard to leave? I'm assuming it was a full-time gig at The Daily Show. It must have been a pretty cool gig, too. Or was it just like, does it look better or sound better than it actually really was?
It's pretty cool. I called it my party trick. If people know where you work, when you work at The Daily Show, it's like all you get to talk about. So it's kind of good and also a double-edged sword. But
Sarah, I really don't care about you and what you do, but can you tell me more about Trevor Noah and Jordan Klepper?
That is how a lot of I told my husband when I met him, and the best thing he did was when he heard where I worked, he said, I don't want to like you for the wrong reason, so let's not talk about that. And I was like, yeah, let's not talk about that.
That's awesome.
But I learned a ton there, and I made two films while I was there. So it was a double full-time job, kind of filmmaking night to weekends and then TV show.
A lot of juggling going on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
well, you probably don't remember the interview, but I love Tickling Giants. And I hope our listeners not only get to see How Saba Kept Singing, which is premiering at Hot Docs, by the way, we're going to talk about that, but definitely please folks go back and find Tickling Giants. It's fun, it's funny, and it packs a global punch. So
thank you. I think in a weird way, I think there's overlap. Like I try
think so too.
To I like to try, and this is the kind of the Daily Show in me, but really just in general loving comedy. Like I try to find my way into hard stories where there's humor to be found.
Yeah, sure,
and sort of like entertainment and social justice meet. And that's also true in How Saba Kept Singing.
Love that, where entertainment and social justice meet. That's great. Sounds like something Marshall McLuhan wouldn't have said.
I have a Mad Libs that are all things Marshall McLuhan wouldn't say. So that's
excellent. Perfect. So we're off to a good start. Oh, I really like that. So without giving too much away about the film, maybe you should at least tell us where it's going to be for listeners over the next little while and where it might be in the future as well. And by the way, congratulations. It's a beautiful and intimate portrait of the power of one. I mean, that sounds a little trite and a little corny, I suppose, on some levels, but it really is. It's deeply moving and powerful on a whole lot of levels.
Yeah, I'm really glad you liked it. I can tell you a little about it. So it's the story of this guy called Saba and how...
The Sabinator?
The Sabinator, as his grandson calls him. He survived the Holocaust and always has thought that the reason he survived is because he has this beautiful singing voice and sang for his Nazi captors. And then didn't talk too much about the Holocaust, but when his grandson starts asking questions, Saba and his family realize there might be more to the story, and a mystery kind of unfolds about who or what might have been involved in actually saving his life. And they go off to on a journey to try to figure that out. And it's premiering at Hot Docs. The first screening is Sunday, May 1st. And actually, there's going to be a live concert after the screening from one of the stars of the film. And there's two other screenings, May 6th and May 8th, all at the Lightbox in Toronto, the TIFF Lightbox. And after this, I'm not sure what's next. We've got some other festivals on the horizon, and hopefully we'll have distribution and people will be able to watch the movie wherever they are.
So you're going to be in Toronto for the showing?
I actually, unfortunately, I have a little baby who's not yet vaccinated, and so I'm not traveling right now, not doing airplanes. So unfortunately, I won't be there.
A new mother. I mean, come on, Sarah, priorities?
I know. I don't know. I've got some messed up
priorities. I mean, come on, mother or filmmaker? I mean,
I told my baby he could drive me, but he wasn't up to using a car.
Well, congratulations there too. That's a beautiful thing. That is really a beautiful thing. So are you? And I absolutely, let's talk about the film, but comedian, journalist, storyteller, producer, director. I mean, what's on your business card? Would you say if you
on my business card, it says can talk backwards and twist balloon animals and has a mean fake sneeze. And I feel like that tells you all you really need to know.
It's all you need, balloon animals. Yeah. I can make a dog and a snake.
Oh, that's good. My first film was actually about balloon twisting conventions. And our tagline was, once you can make a balloon dog, you can do anything.
Right. There's like there's a foundation.
Exactly. Once you learn the basics, you can.
And a deep philosophical metaphor there, I'm sure.
Absolutely. You change your life.
So are you, so seriously though, are you all of those things, or is it, would you say, and this is, sorry for the polarization, but are you a storyteller that kind of wants to change the world? Is that a fair assessment? That's a biggie. I mean,
wants to, I think that's an understatement. I like to tell stories. So my mom is a storyteller, and she's a special ed teacher, but she's always been a part of this Garden State Storytellers League, where since I was a little kid, she would go and do stories and kind of grew up around that. My grandma, Millie, was very much a storyteller and would tell us like everything about growing up as a kid in the Bronx and funny things. And just, I was always really enchanted with those stories. And I think I'm a decent listener and I really like when people share. My grandma always actually encouraged me to be a psychologist, but I went in a different direction, but I did like hearing people's stories and having people kind of open up and share with me. And I really like funny things. Like that's my way of kind of communicating with the world. But so for me, I try to find ways to use humor to tell stories and to tell sometimes hard stories. But yeah, I guess maybe a mix. I guess I wouldn't say journalist. I don't know that. I think that feels maybe more serious than I see myself. Like I like to joke around and maybe some journalists do. I don't know. But I think you can tell the truth and be an entertainer and tell true stories. And that's what I try to do.
Is that a Daily Show influence to some degree? I mean, isn't it fascinating how a comic can just kind of level the room with laughter? And hopefully for me, at least, and isn't this a great film or a great quote or a great piece of poetry or a great conversation even? It comes back to you and kind of haunts you in a good way later.
I think so. I think it's like a mutual attraction, right? So the people who work at the Daily Show are people who like to think about hard things, but process the world with jokes. So like my favorite thing, I left the Daily Show a while ago, but my favorite thing there was when there'd be something unthinkable in the morning and you couldn't imagine when you woke up, like, how is this going to be funny? And then you go into a room and sit with other people who also like to joke around. And then you find kind of like the core emotion and then make a bunch of jokes. And suddenly you have a point of view that you can share in a piece. And like, in the case of How Saba Kept Singing, I mean, this story takes place with the backdrop of the Holocaust, which is of course inherently not funny at all in any way whatsoever, but people who are there are real people. And so, like, you know, there's, in any situation in the world, there's someone who sees something and it just sparkles differently in their eyes, and there's something funny about it, you know? And so for David, that's music. And then when he's with his family, you definitely, you know, the movie opens with him joking around with his grandson. And that's just how he, Saba, looks at the world. And so that attracts me. I think I'm just attracted to stories where people are dealing with something hard through laughter or music or some beautiful coping mechanism.
Yeah, that's great. Beautiful coping mechanisms. There's a title for a self-help book.
That's true.
Yeah, I love the way in the press kit, and I want to ask you what your favorite song is. But I love how in the press kit, you know, the folks, the people who have worked in the film on the film, you've let us know what their favorite song is.
And well, I mean, it's relatable, it's right?
So like I've never seen that kind of, I've seen some pretty detailed press kits over the years, 40 pages long even.
Oh, wow.
But I've never seen a favorite song is this.
Oh, well, I'm glad you liked it. I said my favorite song. I mean, of course, like everyone, I've got a bunch, but I think top of the top is Midnight Train to Georgia by Gladys Knight and the Pips. Just kind of soothing, kind of fun. Like it can be a dance party or a tear shedder, depending on what mood you're in. So I love that one. I love Night Swimming by REM. I love the Paul Simon Graceland album. There's nice. A lot. And I always think for me, like comedy is how I interact with other people, but music is how I internally process my own thoughts. Like I like to play guitar. I like to play harmonica. I like to write songs sometimes. Yeah, I think, I don't know, music is just something that's always been important in my life. My dad's a big music fan. He has a website for Johnny Mercer, a composer. I've just always loved music. And in this film, the whole movie is about how music can just keep you going in darkness, you know? And so like in the press kit, we're like, oh, it's kind of cool. A, I liked it because I learned a bunch of new songs from other people on the crew. And then also, you know, we're living in a crazy time, and music, I think, is also now a lot of a place people can turn to keep going. And so I just thought it was like a fun, interesting thing to learn about our crew.
Well, I think it's great. And I think, you know, with the even when and tell me, you know, you can have a metaphorical or a real buzzer here if I start to give away too much about the film. But okay. Establishing shots, you're striking me as kind of a lover of life as well. And you set the tone, it seems to me, of where we're heading in this film in a really significant, meaningful, human way, if that makes sense.
I think so. Yeah. So I guess, you know, I could say that the first scene is David, aka Saba, and his grandson Avi having this night on the Sabinator, having like, a nice.
That's fun just so funny to me, by the way.
Yeah, they had a Sabala Babala. They have a lot of
all these nicknames, right?
Yeah,
that's great, awesome.
and they're kind of joking around, and like I like a warm invitation as you're coming into a story, especially a story where an audience might think, this isn't for me. This is too heavy. I'm not in the mood. So we want to get to know right away, like, this is going to be a warm story, and it's okay to laugh. Of course, there's horrendous things happening that are not funny at some points, but like this family deals with it by being warm and playful with each other. And you as an audience member can do that too. And that's a very nice comment that I'm a lover of life. I'd like to think so. I mean, you know, like everyone, I have my hard days, but I think you try to look for the good. And I definitely think it's a muscle. And I think like David is a great example of that. Like if anyone had an excuse to be just jaded to the world, it could be David, but that's not who he is. You know, he starts in the film and he's telling us right away that he's this lover of life. And like, I think that takes practice and is a choice and like not an easy one, you know? And so
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
For me, it sounds weird because it's about the Holocaust, but I actually found this a really uplifting movie to work on and like a really great, almost like how-to of, we were editing it during the pandemic and like, you know, there's a lot to be overwhelmed by. And you look at this story and you're like, oh, there's millions of people died in the Holocaust, but everyone, while they were in those camps, they were alive. They were real people. Mm-hmm. And Avi actually had this like line that I loved. That was one of those really hard to lose, but it just didn't fit right in the film moments where he told us about the first time he went to Auschwitz and you get there. And he said, it was just another place. And like, you have this, you picture it like a black and white movie and you get there and there's grass growing and there's birds chirping and the sky is blue and it's a place. And then I'd never been to Auschwitz prior to filming this. And we got there and I was like, I get what he means. Like, you know, it's like, you realize, oh, you're in there. And if you were a prisoner in this camp, you felt the breeze blow on your skin. You know, they're real human beings. And I think it's helpful and like healthy to remember that, and not, they're not statistics. They're
It's kind of a Hannah Arendt's The Banality of Evil in a sense, mm-hmm. right? I mean, Alain René's film Night and Fog, that 28-minute documentary, black and white. I remember the juxtaposition of, hey, there were architects who were designing some of these camps, you know, just that idea that they were living their lives. And, yep. and I don't know if we can talk about, I think I read in an interview with you, you had one moment that really stood out for you about how there were people living alongside of what was going on at the time and this realization that they probably knew. And yet, you know, I think David says at one point, the whole world stood back and watched.
And look what's
going on today and the parallels, et cetera, et cetera. It's just, it really is kind of mind boggling, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. And in lots of ways, like, of course, now everything going on in Ukraine, I mean, there's many places in the world, but specifically in Europe right now, our sound person in Poland still lives in Poland. And he and his family just brought in a few refugees to live with them coming from Ukraine. And the moment that you were referring to is, of course, when you're watching a movie, you know, you watch each scene a million times and it can be hard to watch with fresh eyes sometimes because you're like, you know, what's there. You need someone else to see it for the first time to let you know what's missing or what makes sense. So we were doing a rough cut screening to get some feedback about what did and did not make sense. And there was a scene that I had seen many times already where Saba and Avi, his grandson, are driving towards the camp. And like right outside the gate, there's a whole neighborhood with houses. And the grandson says, "Do you think they knew what was going on?" And David said, "Of course they knew. Everybody knew." And the first many times I watched that scene, I was like, how could you know and do nothing? Like it's unfathomable to, you hope you'd be better than that. And then I was watching the movie after, you know, during one of these screenings, and it was like right as the protests were starting with the Black Lives Matter movement. And I realized, like, I've always known that these horrible things were happening in my own country, and I was looking away and wasn't choosing to address or try, you know, we have this anti-racist movement now. And like, I want to think I'm helping and doing the right thing, but was I doing that? And this moment kind of made me stop and reassess my own role in that. And so I feel like sometimes learning these stories, if we're open, can help us realize places we should be working harder and making sure never again is a real thing in lots of ways, not just literally the Holocaust and Jews, but in other communities.
Do you go into stories like this? Do you go into films like this thinking that there is going to be a call to action of some kind? I mean, maybe that's a little bit of the advocate in me coming out, or the activist or the public engagement guy saying, hey, how can we get people to sign up for this or donate to that, right? But there's definitely something embedded there.
I think it's something that develops over time. So my first goal is to tell the story and to tell it in a way where there's a beginning, middle, and end, and it's a narrative journey, and it's doing justice to the story and entertaining people. That's my number one. But the reason I'm attracted to the story is because I think it's an important story to tell. Any story that I'm going to devote years of my life on, it's because I think it's an important story and a story that excites me and that I'm going to want to talk about for years on end. So the truth is, I'm only, at least so far, historically, I'm only attracted to stuff where I think there's like a reason to keep talking about it. Entertainment is a huge reason in itself, as far as I'm concerned. Like, I think entertainment has true value, especially in crazy times. But in addition to that, I hope that there's a next step. So like in this movie, I really hope that the message will get out that like, even if this might not be the kind of movie you'd usually go for, you can be entertained and watch. And the goal isn't just to learn something, but you're also going to maybe learn something about yourself or about this period of time in history. So that's when, for me, that social engagement, and then it becomes something I'm really excited about. So like with Tickling Giants, we wanted people to think about how they can tickle giants. So find like nonviolent ways to draw attention when there's an injustice. And in this film, I think, you know, we're still kind of learning how, this is our world premiere, so we're just starting to learn how audiences will respond.
At Hot Docs.
But I'm hoping that, you know, similarly, that people think about what keeps them going. Like, I think we're in a, you know, when I met you 5 years ago, as crazy as the world was, my immediate world felt a lot more stable than it does right now. Mm. And I think that's true for a lot of people, at least in my community, where it's been a hard few years. And so I guess I hope people watching, A, think about like where can they see beauty in the world if they want to, and then how can they bring some beauty to the world if they want to, and sort of both of those things are the initial, I guess, points I want people to think about. But, you know, as simple as, it's why I'm asking the question, like, what's your favorite song? Like, it's really easy to get overwhelmed right now. Mm-hmm. And you know, I keep saying with this movie, but like the stuff that mattered for David and his relationships in the camp, all the things that your parents don't want you to focus on when you're in school, like relationships and music and art and things that are like side things, but not the primary, those are the only things that matter. And Like, I think the last
you
few
mean
years.
You mean calculus doesn't matter, Sarah? Is that what you're trying to say?
It matters, but maybe the only things that like really are like no, at their core
I'm with you.
Are going to save you, you know?
I remember finding out, I love the wisdom in all of that, by the way, and I got thumbs up all over the place, and I only have two of them. But I remember finding out that one of the teachers that my son was in kindergarten was learning mathematics. And I remember saying to my wife, Elizabeth, who is a primary school teacher, okay, so really, we got math already? How about just hanging out? How about just playing and building like a block house or something? Like that might, wouldn't there be more, you know?
The social skills are the things. Yeah, and I think it all relates. I mean, of course, you've got to learn stuff,
of course.
And you have to be able to contribute and be in the world. But the things that matter the most are, you know, the people and the art.
The music, the relation. What did you say? The music, the relationship, the
art
were three of the things you, I mean, that's just.
And that's sort of how they're surviving in these camps, right? Those are the three things that in the stories we're telling.
Can you talk to me a little bit, Biggie here, a bit about hope and maybe finding hope through others? Because, you know, I'm coming up on 600 interviews. Nice little plug here for Face to Face. Check it out, folks. We've got lots of interviews. And if you go back to episode 298, you'll hear
Sarah. Start at the very beginning, episode 298.
Yeah. That's right. Sarah's film, Tickling Giants. I think what I've learned coming out of this is that there is power through human connection, through conversation. There's healing there. There's, what did you call it? A beautiful coping mechanism. Right?
Yeah. I think so, it's
talk to me a little bit about that. If you can tell us a bit more about the film without, you know, letting all the cards fall out of your sleeves, but.
Yeah. So in this kind of mystery that we're following in the film, David has a sense that something in himself is how he got through. And that's true, but it's becoming more and more clear that there's more to the story than that. And can anyone really do it alone, you know? And we actually, like, my editor Jackie and I would call David the Jewish Forrest Gump, because he's in all these crazy situations throughout the course of the movie that seem almost unbelievable, except they're true, and somehow he keeps going in the weirdest, craziest, sometimes most horrific situations. And I think, you know, some of that is luck. There are obviously many people who didn't make it through that time period. And some of that is maybe a candle in himself and this element of hope, as you say. And I think it just takes practice. I mean, like, we all have dark moments. And David lived through like the worst things anyone could ever experience. But each day was a new day for him. And I think he was someone who chose to keep going, you know, to keep singing. For him, it was singing. But, you know, for anyone, there's things I hope I never experience. And I mean, so when I was making Tickling Giants, the reason I started to make that film was actually because my best friend had passed away. And it was unexpected, and she was young, and I was really depressed. And for the next year, it was hard to get excited about anything. And then when I learned about that story, it was the first day in almost a year that I was excited about something. And I decided I was going to make another film, and I never thought I was going to make another film because I knew how much work it was. David, you and I were talking about this before, but I learned how much work it was, and I was like, I don't know. But I was like, I got to go towards that. This thing is giving me hope. I got to go towards that. And I think how Saba kept singing is about finding the thing that makes you feel alive and going towards it.
There's so many places I want to go with this, and we're going to have to wrap up in a couple of minutes, but I love that you had mentioned earlier, it's a muscle being able it's the classic sort of, how are you going to get out of bed in the morning? It's freedom, it's choice, it's responsibility. It seems to me, you know, and how can we get there through others and through community? And I think we can only get there through others. And for some, that might be really hard to hear if they're living a life alone currently. And I think it's a challenge for people like us to say, and this is why I love those subtle nuanced call to actions to me as another fellow human being to say, you know what, maybe today's the day I need to pick up the phone and call that person I haven't heard from in 3 years, you know?
Yeah.
Drop the pebble in the pond and trust the ripple, you know? Is that too much to ask?
No, I think, you know, it doesn't, I mean, relationships can mean all sorts of things, you know, it doesn't, and I, just because it's my experience doesn't mean it's someone else's. Someone else might really be okay being more, you know, isolated in that kind of way. But I will say in the last couple of months, actually really since the pandemic started, but I did this at the beginning, but stopped for a while and I'm doing it again lately, is like, I'm trying to be better about when I think of someone, even if it's someone I haven't talked to in a long time, where I might feel embarrassed to start a call. Cause then it's like, oh, we haven't talked in forever and it could be awkward. I've tried to be better about calling them. And I actually have a relative in her 90s who I hadn't spoken to in a long time. And she and my grandma used to speak every weekend. And so I always knew how she was doing, but my grandma passed away 2 years ago and I hadn't spoken to her, to this cousin. And I called her, we've talked twice in the last month or so, and it was amazing. You know, and so
it's so cool.
I think it can feel a little scary to make connections.
Because the implication is, so sorry I haven't thought about you for 11 years, but
I did
today.
Today's the day. Congrats.
Love it. He trusts the cosmos in that way. He trusts that spiritual side, that intuition, you know, whatever you want to call it. And he'll do the same. He'll pick up the phone and call. This is a big, big question. Is this a film for you about lost opportunity? Is this a story about lost opportunity in some way?
I'm thinking about it because I've never really thought of it in that way. I think it's a film about closure for me. And the fact that we may never get closure.
Right.
And that's okay. But if you can try to get some, it's worth pursuing. You know, maybe it's sort of the same as that phone call idea of like, I could not call them because I feel uncomfortable, or I could just give it a shot and see what happens. So I think it's kind of that idea that there's some stories we'll never know the answers to, and we kind of have to write the ending in our head. But sometimes if we're open to it, we can find out more about ourselves if we are willing to look.
I love that notion of, and this is hard for me, that we're looking for closure. We might not find it. Mm-hmm. There is mystery. There is maybe magic there, like New Jersey, you know?
Right, exactly.
Hey, I read somewhere, I think it doesn't come out in the film, and I'd love to hear just as we wrap up, and I only have 32 more questions for you.
Okay, perfect. So just another minute or so.
That's right. Yeah. I think in another interview, you talk about getting to know, I believe it's David's son, Eric?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Who's a rabbi.
Yep.
And you say somewhere that you think prayer is a lot like satire.
Yes.
And I have never heard that before. And I think that's wonderful on the surface. And I can't wait to reflect more on it. But can you unpack that a little bit for me?
Sure. So Eric, David's son, was my family's rabbi my whole life. He retired a few years ago. But he had something that he would say a lot, which is, prayer doesn't change things. Prayer changes people. People change things. And that always stuck with me, of this idea that like mindfulness and where you want to put your energy, and that's how things change. Like having an idea is meaningful, but it's only going to change stuff in your own head. Like putting it into action is how things actually change. And I think of comedy in that way. So like, you know, for example, you were asking about The Daily Show, and at The Daily Show, we talked about a lot of really important things, and sometimes people would post the stories, and that's awesome. Like the story resonated with them, and it was meaningful to them, and it made them feel less alone, and that has value. But whatever that issue is, me posting something isn't going to change anything. Like it's going to actually take some action on my part. So like my hope with comedy is like, if you tell a joke about a hard thing, and it makes someone willing to like open the door and pay attention to that thing, and then you'll hear a million jokes about a million important things, and you might like them all, but there might be one or two that actually resonate with you. Mm. And so like the place where something will change is if you actually like take that information and then choose to learn more or be involved in a cause or be more vocal in some more actionable way. That's how stuff changes. So for me, like my rabbi's idea with prayer, like in my own reflection on it, that became how I wanted to be with comedy. And like you were asking earlier about storytelling, like that's the stuff I want to tell stories about. I want to make funny ways into hard things so that people are like, oh, I don't want to look at that thing, but I'm intrigued. Let me learn more, you know, or pay attention.
That's good. Yeah. Let me peel back another layer. Well, if I can paraphrase Avi, I love how you're, and help me out here, but you're honoring the past and you're telling a story for the future. I think for Avi, it's about singing for the future, but it's congratulations again on the film and thank you for stepping in and wanting to tell this story. And this is what this, I think, can I quote you on this? You play the long ball. Is that
a long game? Yeah.
The long game. This is one that's been percolating for a while for you. So I'm so glad you saw it through to completion. Tell us again, Hot Docs, couple screenings coming up.
Yes. Yeah. Hot Docs. We have our premiere is Sunday, May 1st at 2:30. And I believe there's still some tickets left. And we're hoping that one especially sells out because Avi's going to be performing at that one. And then we also have a screening Friday, May 6th and Sunday, May 8th. And then hopefully sometime soon we'll have distribution news and people will be able to watch House Abba Kept Singing all over.
That's amazing. Well, what a pleasure seeing you again 300 episodes later. I mean,
that's right. I'll see you for episode 900.
Episode 900. Yes. Maybe by then they'll have a cure for hair loss. What do you think?
That's my next film, actually. I'm investigating that very important issue. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Through humor, obviously.
Yeah. We've been talking with Sarah Taxel here today on Face to Face Live. What a pleasure about her new film, How Saba Kept Singing. Thanks, Sarah. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed this. Thank you.
So there you have it. Sarah Taxler on Face to Face talking about her new film, How Saba Kept Singing, at Hot Docs, coming hopefully soon to either a festival or to a theater or maybe a digital theater near you. Stay tuned for more information. You'll be able to find that on facetofacelive.ca. But what a pleasure chatting with Sarah about this film and about how stories that matter, talking about comedy and about this idea where entertainment and social justice meets. And it's, it's a beautiful reflection on why we need to step in and sometimes just roll up our sleeves and reconnect. I think that's one of the takeaways for me. Don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about what I do and facetofacelive.ca, all now under the same umbrella. You can find many, many different interviews there with filmmakers and people making a difference around the globe. Please leave us a review and subscribe to wherever you listen to podcasts, whether that's iTunes or Spotify. Please leave us a review. Take you a couple minutes. We'd really appreciate that. And we'll see you again real soon. Thanks for joining me here today on Face to Face Live.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.